Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This is Jordan Grace, and you're listening to the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
BWB, this is One Nation Radio. You better get it right. Rich Ladder, James Boyd came to give him life. The Blackest Wrestling Podcast has come to kick all ass and drop his 6 feet if they're kicking trash. Word, let me welcome y'all to something different. And if you dig it, man, you should let some friends listen. We be getting it in this on the regular, dude. Ravishing flow, but this shit rule. See, James don't rap, so I had to break it down. The whole network, man, we coming for the crown. Raps in the columns, I keep them both covered. Making the beats too, so the listeners can bump it. Hit us with the rating, yeah, I'm saying it's a 5. Before you hit it, talk, bob your head side to side. It's One Nation Radio, and this is the beginning. It's Rich, and I'm here with James. It's time to listen to One Nation.
We got to unleash the power of the pyramid.
This is Mike Sempervivi from WrestlingObserver.com. Check me out on Wrestling Observer Live every day. And also check out your boys, Rich and James, on One Nation Radio.
This is Kenny Omega. We're listening to One Nation Radio. Check it out, guys. These guys know what's up. Big Kenny Omega fans, that's all that counts to me. Goodbye and good night. Thanks.
Hey, folks. Welcome to this week's edition of One Nation Radio. I'm James Boyd. Hear me out. Rich Lotto. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. A lot going on in all the stuff that we're watching. But one thing I can say that I did not watch, and, you know, I don't think we really paid any attention to or had no intention of paying attention to it, was the Army had a happy birthday over the last weekend. And there were WWE wrestlers sent to this event. Apparently, it was like there was some contention whether this was a Trump rally or not. Looking at the results in the footage, it sure seemed that way to me. But they ended up with some wrestlers there. Cody Rhodes, the Street Profits, Tiffany Stratton. I believe it was one other person that was there. But they ended up having to sing Happy Birthday to the Army and warm the crowd up before Trump came out. And I just found this kind of hilarious because, you know, I don't think any of these wrestlers, when they enrolled in wrestling school, pictured themselves having to sing Happy Birthday for the Army one day just 'cause.
Well.
One day, you throwing your head at the ground, and then the next day, you giving it up for, you know, the largest army in the world.
So, like, I don't see how this is too much different from Tribute to the Troops. So, like, if you are someone that started in WWE, yeah, you kind of did. You kind of did set up the... You kind of did realize this comes with the territory. If you're going to have to... You are going to, like, co-sign the United States military. Like, that's a thing. Now, as far as the connection to Trump, I mean, I don't think they did that without knowing Trump was going to be there and come out eventually. So, there's that. Like, but, so, you know, am I going to hold it against Street Profits or Tiffany Stratton or Cody Rhodes that they were, they showed up at some rally that Trump was also attacked to? Not personally, not really, not me. Y'all can do that if y'all want to. I don't care for me. But, like, even if they didn't know, they still signed up to be on the United States military show at a in 2025 at a time like this. So if you are trying to do the what do you call it, splitting hairs of you know, whatever, is like, I mean, you knew what they signed up for, or at least, or when they agreed to the call or whatever else, they knew what they were going to be involved with. And the Trump thing is just another level of it, but there's still a level that they went to.
Well, like, I wonder,
like, this is like one of those things where it's like, did you know, like, what do you call it? Like the pregame stuff for NFL games or whatever else with the troops. It's like, yeah, you're part of the propaganda machine now. Sorry.
I wonder if they got the backstage introduction, because I didn't see any footage emerge or anything. But one thing I did see emerge.
My question is that if they had let it be known he was going to be there, maybe Roman Reigns would have showed up to work for WWE.
Perhaps, you know, big supporter, you know. But one person that did show up somewhere and footage did emerge, not written down here, but Triple H and Stephanie McMahon were hanging out with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The other day in the office, posting the pictures and all. Apparently they're forming some commission on like sports and nutrition and health, and I'm like, oh no, man, I don't think I need the guy whose heart almost exploded from all the roids he done put in it, you know, advising the youth about fitness and health and all this other stuff. Like, I don't know, for me it doesn't add up, but a lot of things don't add up in this world.
Well,
but,
I gotta tell you, honestly, like, I'd rather have someone that had PED usage attached to your career as an adult compared to an anti-vaxxer guy as far as overseeing that stuff. So, I mean, you know, yeah.
Triple H pro-vax? You know, he clearly not afraid of
me. I don't know, but what I will say is he damn sure ain't came out there talking about raw milk and shit. So. Yeah.
I mean, Triple H had to have told him about the spray. He had to have told him about
COVID,
the spray.
The COVID piercing spray shit.
You pierce it like a sword, baby.
Yeah.
Kill the cell walls of the virus.
Where is this? Why are these people missing from NXT in 2020 on their tapings if this shit's so piercing? Oh, all these people got concussions? Is it concussions or COVID? Is it one or the other? You let me know. Let me know.
Yeah. Put some tussing on it, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so Stephanie and Triple H out there doing public appearances together. That's nice. And RFK. And, you know.
You know what Stephanie reminds me of right now?
What?
Do you like, attached to all the bullshit, definitely knew something at least, or at least like by still being around the bullshit, is like, you know, giving some shit some room to breathe or whatever else. It reminds me of like the Katy Perry press tour that she went on for her album that came out, I think, this year or maybe the end of last year, where it's like, oh, can you answer us why you're working with Dr. Luke again? And then she gives this answer about like, yeah, you know, this is about my whole career and everything, and he was a part of it and all this stuff. But I actually answered the part where like, hey, why are you going with this super producer that like basically was sent away from the pop community, pop like top stars for almost a decade because like he may or may not have like serially raped Kesha? Like,
yeah,
you ain't got no answer on that. Why are you giving me every answer for what I asked you? Like her doing that podcast or how often that podcast is, her doing that podcast at WWE and then like still showing up and all this stuff. And it's like, aren't you in the paperwork? Is she number three? Isn't she number three in the paperwork?
I think so. But I think it's like, why is she even tempting it? She should just like all back. But maybe she's like, positioning herself to where like, hey, I'm here if you ever need me to step in.
That's exactly my point. Is like, your hands, regardless of however distance there is, anybody that thinks about it for 5 seconds,
stories.
definitely knows. She knows some stories, and the part that she knows story ain't told no stories means her hands is dirty. There's no way her hands ain't dirty. Or she's getting her hands dirty by still being around. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, man. It's a bad look. It's just a bad look. All the way around.
Oh, man.
I would suggest that Stephanie Triple H stop showing up stop showing up like at courtrooms. Stop showing up in congressional buildings. It always goes bad for them when they do this shit.
Yeah, not too long ago they were at that hearing for Linda.
That's what and, exactly.
Looking
exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly. Did you see the shit with Linda recently?
Yes.
With Corey. Oh yeah, I Corey did. Bush.
Just terrible, gave bro. Her the work. An absolute embarrassment.
Gave her the work. Stop looking at cue cards.
Bad man. But moving on. I just wanted to make a quick pit stop there. Let's talk about AEW, man. Let's get into it, man. Last week, as Summer Blockbuster opened up with one of the best matches in Dynamite history, between Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay. Man, I thought this one was really put together well, and some of the arm stuff like really popped me towards the end of the match, like how they built it up. And then when Ospreay was, you know, basically a one arm man still doing the hidden blade out of nowhere in the counters. I'm a sucker for the counters and all that. And I think, you know, the combo of the match and the angle after it, this is like one of my favorite segments in the history of this show.
Yeah, I thought it was a great match. I it's not at the level of the first match, but I mean, that wasn't a point. Like, I thought they had an awesome, incredible match, and like, I really liked the part where the match is so much different from the first match. It turns into, you know, Ospreay's being down with his bad arm, and he has to, and he's, you know, making the best of trying to survive with Swerve, and Swerve is broke down and he has a bad knee. And yeah, I really enjoyed the match. As you mentioned, the counters, a lot of that stuff was really high level sophisticated, and I thought we were doing the 5 more minutes thing, like similar to Adam Cole and MJF from 2023. Not angle where like MJF was going to like weasel out, but like overtime crowd is like it's a dusty finish type thing. Like you're gonna restart the match, but as soon as Death Artist came out, I was like, oh, okay. And then the eating of the bullet by Ospreay in from the Young Bucks double super kick. I thought that was really well done. And I think, you know, I think what they've done the last 2 weeks with Ospreay and Paige and Swerve as far as like this road towards they're going to end up all fighting on the side of AEW eventually. Like they're getting dragged into it. They're going to put that stuff aside eventually. And I think it's a great story they've told. I think it's all after everything that Swerve and Paige have done to each other. Like, it has to be a long road to get to it. It can't just be, like, as simple as it was with Ospreay and Omega, where it's like, well, we both hate Don Callis. It's got to be like, no, we got to be dragged almost kicking and screaming and just back against the wall, end of the line, last desperation. It's either this or death. We got to make this work. So I think it's first and foremost the angle with Ospreay to get to with the Swerve thing, take by number one. I thought it was well done. Great. The part where they never showed his face, I thought it was well, even better. And then like the part where the backstage stuff, where they teased that we screwed, you know, I thought it was well done. They teased even back, after the Yumba screwed Swerve at, Revolution. That is like, was it Revolution?
It was
Dynasty. Dynasty. At Dynasty, they like, yeah, we did this for Paige, and then Swerve, you know, a couple weeks ago was like, I didn't forget this. And then they come back to it, and ultimately, in the locker room, or in front of the medical room, Swerve and Nana are overhearing the conversation, like, no, we never agreed to this. Like, actually, I was telling the truth, or Paige actually was telling the truth. And Paige didn't realize that he was, you know,
yeah, being heard.
Divulging that to Swerve and Nana overhearing, I thought it was all well done. So it's like, you see the breadcrumbs where they're heading. I think they're doing it very, very well.
I find it really satisfying too. Yes. Like, yeah, did the shit like suck when Swerve didn't win the belt?
But at least they have an explanation. They've had explanation the whole time of where they were headed. Where like Swerve's not the champion, but the reason why he's not champion. Yes.
they have more than an explanation. They have like two matches built out of it, like between the Moxley and Page match, and then you know, from there you're looking at Swerve and Will Ospreay, with Swerve loses to Hangman that same, or you know, a Double or Nothing, and then back-to-back pay-per-views, like, you know, the guy that loses the pay-per-view match is basically roped into the Young Bucks thing, and you know, the Young Bucks match at these things is a huge spot. It's almost like an Undertaker spot. Like, they can be champions, they can not be champions, but they are always going to get time. They're always going to have a chance to have a great match. And then it's like, why wouldn't you? And all you got to do is come up with the reason why. And I think they've like delivered with like all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned that like it's the Undertaker spot, open spot for WrestleMania. Can we call Kenny Omega spot the Undertaker spot and call the Young Bucks spot a Triple H spot? Because it's basically the same thing. Where, like, these two people are going to be on this show, and regardless of whatever the fuck is going on, and they're going to be in a marquee position, and that will be it. It's the end of the, it don't matter if they're in a title situation or not, but, like, these two will have important marquee storylines for, like, 15, 20 years at this biggest show. Can we say that? Because I don't want to call Trip. I don't want to, because you said, you know, Undertaker spot for Young Bucks. Like, I don't want to say that, dude. In my mind, I'm like, does that mean that Omega is a Triple H spot? No, reverse it. I can't. Mentally, I just can't. It doesn't. I know functionally it doesn't matter, but mentally for me, it's gonna bug me. Please, can we just switch it? Please, Rich. Please.
Sure.
Thank you.
But I really like this match. It was like, as I was watching, I was talking with Dankov and Jeremy at the time. It was like live in real time. It was like, yo, this is special. What they're doing in there, and like, it just felt like even the match they had last year, like, I think, you know, just performance wise, they went crazy in that one. But this one, it felt like they had a couple objectives. They had to, you know, show they were equals. They had to get over the fact that they were friends going into this thing. They had, I thought the crowd in Portland was excellent all night for this show. And they pretty much owned that show. And they felt like some of the biggest stars, like, at a peak important time of their careers. So shout out to Swerve and Will Ospreay for that match. And, you know, I have an affinity for draws done well. I think this beat the shit out of that MJF and Cole one they did a couple years ago that you mentioned a couple minutes ago. That people were just going crazy and acting like it was God's gift to wrestling. I thought this beat the shit out of that.
This one was way better. It was markedly better. However, I still think that match was awesome. Like, I still take that match over that 4.5 shit they did at All In that, you know, very divisive or whatever else. The work itself is 4.5, but just the finishes. But I like to draw a lot more. Like, talking about, like, we basically are separating, like, or we're, what basically what we're saying is, like, we're shitting on, like, a 4.5, or we're saying that, like, Ospreay and Swerve basically wiped their ass with easy 4.5 plus star draw that MJF and Adam Cole did. Like, that's very impressive. That's hard to do. That's not easy to do. 4.5 star matches don't just fall out of the sky all that often. I understand that we're at a special level of pro wrestling this era, but still, 4.5 star, you'd be happy with whatever you get.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the angle at the end, you know, I had just one thought. I was like, if this was Hangman Page taking the kick for Swerve, I think it may have even gone off even harder. And
I don't think they do that.
No, I'm saying because I was like, all right, well, what if Ospreay just won the match? It feels like they were swapped.
No. What I'm saying, if they swapped, I don't think they pulled that card, because I don't think at this point in this stage of it is believable. Yet, if it was Paige there, Paige ain't Paige would, shit. Paige might have all of a sudden reached underneath the fucking apron, and all of a sudden he had a spiked cowboy boots and red. That's for a triple super kick. Like, we ain't there. So I get what you're saying. Like, maybe they do that if it was them, if this was swapped out as you mentioned, but like further down the line, not like 2 weeks post, you know, post Double or Nothing, or 3 weeks post Double or Nothing. No, 2 weeks post Double or Nothing. I don't think so. But, you know, for the crowds, for the fan service, they would have lost it. They would have lost it.
Yeah. It would have been, I think, even, like, and I think the Will thing is, like,
it's better.
Like, really, we're getting Swerve and Will Ospreay versus the Young Bucks, like.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, that's what it looks like if we're headed towards.
write it down, man. Like, yeah,
like that's what we're headed towards.
Write the stars down, man.
Yeah.
But after that,
go ahead.
No, I was going to transition to something else.
Yeah, go ahead.
But go ahead.
Because it's going to come up eventually anyway, so go ahead.
So Don Callis interrupted Kazuchika Okada, and this shit here, I was dying. So Renee is speaking with Okada, and she's talking about the winner-take-all match with Kenny Omega. She basically says, this is the first time on American soil. Is this version of Okada ready for this version of Kenny Omega? Before Okada could respond, Don Callis jumped in there and he was basically trying to provoke him. He said, why is Okada in this match and not Kyle Fletcher? Has Okada had a better 6 months in the ring than Kyle Fletcher? Why is it not Takeshita? Has he had a better 6 months than Takeshita? I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey bro, Kyle Fletcher could beat Will Ospreay in, you know, Okada kind of did that at World's End. What are you talking about?
So, Okada was basically like, or just looking at him like, huh? And then Callis basically started yelling at Okada. He's like, maybe I should just address this to you. Why is it not Kyle Takeshita? Why is it you? Because that makes me sick. And then basically, the whole group ends up surrounding him after Okada grabs him. Basically, he's like, hey, man, I don't want no trouble. You know, I'm just an old man, you know. Whole group's there. They don't attack Okada, and Okada just says, bitch.
He let him go and then called him a bitch and walked away.
Yeah, at this point, I was like, that's strange. I was like, okay, don't think about it.
Well, they're all evil.
Yeah,
they're all.
I was like, hold on. Is this like Okada, like kind of babyface turn? Huh? What's happening here? I was like, oh, okay, hold on.
I didn't think about this till it happened, but like I was just in my mind, I was like, oh, they didn't beat him down because he's evil as well. Yeah. Like you don't want to break any furniture and when you inside the hallways, the Legion of Doom. You know, it's one of those.
So
it comes out of all these checks.
We got this Mystico and MJF thing. So MJF or Mystico beats Blake Christian pretty decisively.
Yes.
Or whatever.
That is what Vanilla Baby is there to do, get whooped.
Yeah. That man's wrestled Kenny Omega and Mystico in the same year. Nice year for him.
Didn't he wrestle Swerve too?
I believe he did.
Yeah.
I believe he did. I have to double check. No, was that Clark Connors that wrestled Swerve? I know Clark Connors worked him too, but okay. I have to look through the list. But after Mystico won, MJF came out, Hurt Syndicate. Basically, MJF congratulated Mystico. He said, that was very impressive, my friend. It's not easy to impress me since all these people know I'm the most complete professional wrestler in the sport today. He challenged Mystico for Grand Slam Mexico. He said, I'm going to give you a match next week at Grand Slam Mexico. I look forward to ripping that dime store mask off your face. This actually kind of worked for me. MJF kind of popped me during this. And I feel ashamed. But I thought, I was like, oh. You know, I thought this set it up well.
What about the rest of it?
What do you mean?
Sin Cara calls him a puta madre.
I love that too.
And then like MVP like apparently is like giving him translations, which is like he ain't actually giving no damn translation. It just makes it funnier. He's like, he turns around, he goes, what? He's like, you gonna be puta madre? What? So then he goes, listen to me. He's like, you know, when I used to watch my TV, and you were just sloppy Sin Cara. I was like, oh my fucking God.
I didn't like that part, but
me neither. Because like, stop being. Why are your brain? Why do you have these WWE brain worms?
Yeah,
like, bro, we know who the fuck he is.
Say anything back to you like that.
Like
the only thing is.
If MJF loses, fine.
Oh, there's under no circumstances should he beat Mystico. None.
Right, but it's MJF, so he's going to come away with something.
Yeah.
Who has he done a clean job to except for Hangman Page?
It's been a long while. Daniel Garcia, maybe?
No, he beat Garcia, and then Garcia gave him the move that put him on the shelf back after he won. Remember that? That is true. Osprey, did he beat, did Osprey beat him clean in Wembley? I don't remember.
Distraction finish for Daniel Garcia.
Oh yeah, that's right. Never mind. I forgot about that. Never mind. So Hangman Page, but we really got to bang on. Unless you're going to go back to Wardlow, that job, that clean job he did for him. That was 2022, right? He left the company for months and came back after that, right? I was like, he showed up next day, cut a work shoot promo, and called Tony called a fucking mark and went off TV to take a paid vacation, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time. Did he lose to Adam Cole? Did Adam Cole beat him at World's End?
When?
World's End.
This year?
Last year.
Last year?
Adam Cole did beat him, but I don't remember if it was clean or not.
The ring had to be involved. It's MJF.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. But then again, you know, Adam Cole is the, you know, the political, you know, whisperer. He got Malakai to lay down before he came back to become Alistair. How's that going, by the way? I haven't heard a peep since he showed up. It's been over a month.
I'm glad you brought that up. That King of the Ring tournament they're doing, that's some of the most fraudulent shit I've ever seen in my life. I thought that huge-ass bracket where these were all singles matches, James. Apparently, those things were all broken up to be four-way matches or whatever to keep niggas out of doing jobs like fucking Rusev, like Aleister Black. They separate all these dudes up and divide them up, and it's just like, why do y'all not want to beat anybody? It's so funny, bro. It's like, if you don't beat anybody, nobody can like ascend. So it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I didn't even know that was going on. I didn't even know the Dragons were even out for King of the Ring yet.
So after that, we got Speedball Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, and Masquerade Dorado out there with the Hurt Syndicate. Basically, they came to save Mystico after the beatdown was starting. And it went into their match. MJF pretty much worked this whole match, and he was dressed like MVP. We got a question from Heavenly Halbert in the Discord, which just sent me into hysterics when I saw it. His question was, with MJF doing MVP tribute gear and spots, can we add MVP to the ONR Fake Legend Hall of Fame? Absolutely. Absolutely. Along the side, the likes of William Regal, Billy Gunn, Matt Hardy. You know, you can go down the list.
Okay, hold on. Matt Hardy, a fake legend, or the...
Bully Ray is definitely a fake legend.
But I'm trying to figure out what Matt Hardy. Okay, so
you know, I go back and forth on Matt Hardy though.
I will leave him out of that because like then I gotta start asking questions like, so does that mean like nothing he's ever done is legendary? Because like the Hardy boys are legends. They're absolutely legends. Yeah. So you saying like as a singles act he's a fake one, but he's like, well, but his tag team is. So like you kind of, it's like one foot in, one foot out. Like, he passes my test. But both the Dudleys, fake legends. Yeah. Individually fake legends. And together. Yeah, fake legends. Absolutely.
So, I think MVP will qualify, but... Raven said,
Jeff Carey, I know, still a legend. Sorry, still a legendary tag team. Sorry, I agree. I don't disagree. Still legendary. Sorry. Happens.
So, this match, largely worked by MJF, taking all the bumps, doing all the spots, and there's not good things going on with the Hurt Syndicate, man. How long are they going to last in this promotion? Because if it's any longer than the rest of the calendar year, I would probably be surprised.
So the question I was going to ask you earlier that I said I'm going to save it because I knew it was going to come back up. So you mentioned the Young Bucks and Swerve and Ospreay as a tag team match. What are the Hurt Syndicate doing at All In, and what are they going to do to make me actually care? Like, what are they going to do? What kind of match are they going to put on to make me not, like, while I'm there in the arena, go to concessions or go to the merch stand and see what I can get at that particular time? Because they give me nothing to actually think they're going to give me something entertaining.
Like, you would think.
And once the bell rings.
It could have been in this match, but they didn't really give them much. They don't have necessarily good promos. They don't have good matches.
Well, MJF has good team. MJF and MVP have good talking segments, but I'm talking about the tag team of the Buff Neck Niggas.
Yeah. But in those promos, like, they run people down. They don't really do anything productive for these people. These people get nothing back on
them. They bury people. They sell a little bit, like, physically. And then in the matches, they just completely destroy people. Unless Big Cass is, Big Bill's in the match. And then they'll basically isolate him off and then whoop the hell out of your boy, Bad Apple.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I am rapidly losing confidence that was already low. That I feel like we've kind of talked about. Trish and Sarah talked about it. They talked about it again this week. I was getting to, like, Meltzer and Alvarez now. That's like, what are they doing? And you bring up All In. That's a great
point. They're putting themselves over.
Look, because it's like you start looking around that roster, and it seems like everybody worth a damn is running from these guys.
Yeah. And now MVP's even mentioning that in his promos, in his talking segments. It's like, yeah, no
one's me, you ain't
going to put nobody over. You ain't trying to do no business. You are doing hurt business. That's it. You are in the business of making yourself look cool and make everybody else look like virgin, dweeb, dork, nerd, ass niggas. That's it. I get it. You're cool and you're not making anyone else look cool. That's not how pro wrestling works. That's not how you make anything productive in this thing. Right? Like, you're a tag team. It'd be one thing if it was Bobby Lashley was running through niggas like a hot knife through butter to get to the title. He ain't even doing that. He's just in the tag team having a lot of time of his life just smiling, wearing raw-ass outfits.
Yeah.
Fits clean as hell. What was that? Was that turquoise? Or was that taupe?
That purple shit he wore one time?
No. What he wore just this week.
Oh, I don't even remember.
It's like a dark turquoise. It was clean. It was like leather. It was like a leather type material. It was clean. But it's like the fit. Look, man, the fashion show ain't enough. It's not enough.
They got to get out the WWE mentality. They've been there for so long. AEW does not work like WWE. Not backstage, not on camera.
The problem is they don't realize the backlash is going to soon be on them. I think other people will, that's around, like, in backstage around them, understand it. Maybe they're even telling about it, but, like, they think, well, we come out, we're awesome, we look cool, and the crowd likes our storyline MJF, and it's like, you don't understand, like, once that ends, what's the next step after this? You have given nothing to the game, and eventually you're going to reap what you sow when the MJF shit eventually ends. It ain't going to last forever. This ain't the bloodline.
The game will come back to you.
Right.
I don't mean Triple H.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, I mean, we've been talking, look, how many months ago we were like, hey, man. What pay-per-view was it? When they were facing Outrun,
we were
like,
Revolution.
It had been before then. Yeah, it was early. We were like, hey, man, they ain't doing nothing. They not doing nothing. They just beating people ass. And that's cool until people get tired of want to see good-ass matches from these guys, because they're capable of having good-ass matches, those two together in a tag team. But tag teams in the division don't want to wrestle him. Gee, I wonder why.
Like, and I imagine wrestling the hurt of people, I believe, like, I don't know this, I haven't been in the ring, obviously, with them, but James, do you think that you're going to be calling the match when you wrestle against the Hurt Business?
No, you were getting your ass whooped. They are taking 90% of the match. And wonder why I have this, why I think that's the case, because they've done it in every pay-per-view match they've been in the title defense. They take, like, 90% of the match. They whoop and beat all ass.
It's
the matches look like how a BG album sounds. It ain't nothing but thuggish, dark, bleak shit going on. this shit down to the bone, Grizzle.
So, one funny ass fucking part of this whole thing was at the very beginning of the show, Hangman Page is walking in the building, and then all of a sudden, Jon Moxley is ducked off to the side where you don't, where Hangman doesn't see him, and he turns around like, and it's like he's in disguise. He has like a hat pulled low or something. I was like, bro,
he's
I sent a tweet out, and Moxley spins around real slow and shit. I was like, bro, this is how Bruce Lee used to like infiltrate movies in like Chinese Connection, like when he was dressed as like a telephone man or something before he goes and whoops everybody's ass.
Yeah.
That's like the funniest shit Jon Moxley has done in a year.
Bro, I was like, this evil motherfucker's everywhere. Like, as you mentioned, Bruce, like, it's like some straight up espionage shit. Like, niggas, you know, I'm part of staff. I just, you know, I what would have been better if they had shown like a, imagine if there was like a Death Riders, like Being the Elite for Death Riders Evil Edition, right? And like they show backstage when that man gets to the stadium early, Death Riders Stadium early, they grab a staff member, whoop his ass, throw him in the closet and strip him naked and take his clothes and then Moxley then has the hat and he's staff now. Yeah. Like, yeah, that shit was hilarious, bro. And the funniest, maybe even funnier is like, just sex before it, it's Hangman talking to Daniels or whatever else. And like, they didn't even realize, like, yeah, that's a pretty big security guard.
Niggas got no peripheral vision.
Yeah, I mean, I get it if you don't see him because he's wearing all black. Like, you know, most of the camera crew and security in AEW is wearing all black. So I get that. It slides. When that man turned around, I was like, that's fucking Moxley. And I was like, it's been to whoop his ass. And sure enough.
So... then all of a sudden, about an hour later, Hangman Page comes stumbling out.
That's
and he's
a long
bound
ass
and gagged.
Imagine getting your ass for an hour.
Niggas, did they take a lunch break off his ass at any point? Oh, or did they just have Marina put him in a hold a little bit while the rest of them rested? Like what went on here? The man was already hog tied and bound out here. Like, that's some look. Tunnel Talk, listen to Tunnel Talk on the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
He just lucky they didn't break out no baby oil.
Yeah, yeah. so they had.
What?
They had.
Another one. Yeah, they meant hogtied.
Hogtied, yes. Who knew they knew how to hogtie, James?
Bro, I'm having a coughing fit from laughing over here, bro. Oh man.
Oh, in the comments, they're saying happy Pride Month. Indeed.
I see that. Happy consensual Pride.
Yeah.
That's the only part that matters.
Yeah. Therefore, I was whooping his ass. And then Moxley cut a promo. He said, for a long time now, you've been searching high and low for something. I don't know what it is you've been searching for, but you have exactly 4 weeks to find it. You have exactly 4 weeks to step up and become the man everyone wants you to become. If you're not prepared to do that, pack your shit and get the hell out. From there, Hangman headbutted Moxley while he was still restrained. But the Death Riders was basically like, nah, man, we ain't having none of this fighting back. So they went and got a chair. Moxley put a bulldog choke on him, and Claudio wrapped it around his neck. All of a sudden, the ops ran out, Joe, Hobbs, and Shibata. And the Death Riders, you know, took their ass off. And then Hangman, you know, got up pissed. He said, I come too far, and I'm too close for them to be the best you've got, because I would ride through death itself to take that world championship. And if I find one of you tonight, I will take your heads. Texas Death Match, be there.
Hey,
I feel like it's happening.
Do another one. Great. Look, so do you remember the time right before in the buildup of Samoa Joe versus Swerve, where Swerve brought out the chain and choked Samoa Joe, and then Joe clearly said, nah, bro, you forgot. You tried to choke a nigga with no neck, and then he just got out of it. Hey, man, I need the same kayfabe application for, like, hey, man, you ain't winning, you ain't headbutting no bald head nigga and surviving. That's not how that works. I watched too much boxing in my life where headbutts happen with a bald head nigga, and it is devastating. For Hank Man with his luscious locks to come out here and headbutt one of my brethren and win, nah, bro, that's you breaking kayfabe. You breaking kayfabe.
This insulted the bald sensibilities. Hey, this has been the bald educational woman.
Weapon. This is a weapon. This is a weapon. And I ain't talking about my brain. This is a weapon. Okay. This scalp, this bear scalp is a weapon, okay?
So after that, we got Anna Jay and Tay Mello against Megan Bain and Penelope Ford. Happy to see Tay Mello back.
Yes. Very happy to see her back. Do you watch her when she did a couple shows in Stardom?
I didn't see those, no.
Okay, it was beginning of this year. So, okay. Yeah, she was fine.
But,
she was fine. Obviously, she was still working her way back.
Yeah. I had fun watching this. I think the Bain and Ford combo has been a nice addition and to give Megan Bain something to do in the meantime before she's heated up as a challenger again somewhere.
What do you think of Penelope's since she's been back? I think she's been better. Like, just straight up better wrestler.
I think she's like realized, like, you know, the calendar is turning here. Like, you look around and there's not that many people from the time that she was there still regularly in action. So every time she gets a chance to go out there, you know, she's trying to, you know, prove that she fits. And I think her and Bain, like, that's a good thing right there, because it will. I think people like Penelope Ford that watched the company for a while, and then sticking Bane with her is like, you know, give her some year credibility, trade, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, even before the pairing, I mean, like, she had a few matches before they started eventually moving to that tag team, but I was like, I like what she was doing in singles. Like, I think she's something's changed. Don't know what it is, you know, but something's clearly changed. She's having better matches now.
Babe Mello got the win, basically, on
Penelope.
Ford.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a nice reunion. TJ, everybody always kind of liked that team. And they are like the deathmatch team. So hopefully they escalate this and they can do it.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the no DQ match from that Bain and Ford had with who was it last week? It was Harley and Anna. I like that match.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously set the whole thing up for Harley to get the bloody spot on the steel steps or whatever, but like, I still liked it.
Yeah. So after that, we had the Okada Omega basically contract signing and the unveiling of the AEW Unified Championship. But before that, we got this fucking excellent 6-minute video package for Okada and Omega. And I think if you were somebody that watched those matches in real time, you really appreciated it. You really felt like, okay, they're taking time to try to show this thing to be special to people that have not seen this before. I don't know if they necessarily achieved their goal, because a big part that the video packages can't really cover, because I don't think pro wrestling promotions really have an incentive to do this. Like, they cannot properly convey like how great those matches were in real time and then sell it based on that.
Right.
Like, they have no incentive to do that or whatever, because it's
And from a storytelling perspective of promoting a match, it's more important that people that have watched the matches or have not watched matches understand the rivalry between those two more than however great those matches were. So I think they actually got, so the main objective they got accomplished, but I agree with you. So I think if you were wondering like, why is it such a big deal? And they show you those, like, this is the story of like, if they had put in a little bit longer, like, yeah, this title reign, and obviously it's another promotion, you probably can't do this, but it's like, hey, this title reign that Kazuchika Okada had, it may be the greatest pro wrestling title reign of all time. Maybe that would add a little bit more to it to show you like the kind of journey that it took or the kind of mountain that Okada was, or maybe it makes you be like, if he was that, then why is he not that here? I don't know. But either way, I thought it was really well done in saying like these two had a defining.
I was fired up watching it.
These two had a defining thing. And also, boy, you know what this felt like? You know, when they show like footage of like the 2013 NBA finals or the 16 finals and you're like, bro, this shit was not this grainy. I remember seeing it. Like, the footage was looking cloudy and dusty. I was like, bro, I know there's no way that in 7 years that like the camera work or the graphics and stuff has changed so much. We're like, now it's like I'm watching fucking Jordan footage, Jordan last shot pushing off Brian Russell now. Jesus Christ. We get old, man. Cause it's like, you remember this shit in your mind, crystal clear and vivid. And then all of a sudden you see the footage. It's like, there's no way the cameras have changed this much in this amount of time. No way.
I mean, maybe they was just playing the 720p copy that had always been on New Japan World. But you know what?
That might be it. And because when they were showing, I was like, damn, this shit looked dusty. And then they showed both of them in the AEW footage. I was like, God damn it. All right, man. All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But like, I don't know if like this got it over with people that don't have any connection to this, but for someone that does, like it was so exciting, and I think it was like, it was so appreciated to try to show the deference to it, because like this was a rivalry that rewrote in-ring performance that just kind of took it to a whole new level. And the thing is, since then we've seen matches like in this vein. We've seen the rise of Will Ospreay. We've seen Danielson come back. We've seen the Bucks, Hangman, Swerve, like different people like step up to these like legendary levels, not to mention your Kota Ibushi, Tomohiro Ishii, Tetsuya Naito, everybody else in that time period just carrying it forward. It's like, it's so hard to show how special that one was, because what they did in those matches became the standard that everyone competed with.
Right. It's like when you first heard like Lex Luger's 808. Yeah. Right. And then it's like, now, like, I got another example, perfect one, right? You remember when Dominic Wilkins dunked on Larry Bird and knocked his ass to the ground in midair? You ever seen that clip?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kane has this big, like, he likes basketball, but what he really likes is watching clips of people getting dunked on, right? So,
I don't like a real nigga to me.
Until he starts wanting to talk to you during the middle of a playoff game about dunks, and I'm like, there's a game on right now, you're going to see a dunk. So anyway, he starts asking, what's the best dunk you've seen? He'll do it like every few days, and I'm like, I think I told you, like, you know, these dunks. He's like, oh, those are good. And he's like, so he started asking about other dunks and whatever else. I was like, there's this dunk, whatever. I showed him the Dominique dunk on Larry Bird. He puts Larry Bird's ass in the ground. The crowd's losing their mind. He goes, I don't think that's a good dunk. I was like, okay. I see what you mean. So, like, this is a perfect example. Like, the thing that happens first, as time passes, that gets emulated and stuff gets patterned off of or whatever else, it may, you know, it becomes less special in the eyes of people that only saw the things that it was imitating. Right? So, like, that's a big thing. So that's one of those things where it's like, I can't believe this fucking sixth grader, going to be seventh grader, saw Dominique Wilkins dunk on Larry Bird so hard that he fell to the fucking floor on the baseline, and it said like, that's not a good dunk. I just couldn't believe it. Like, I rage flashed over my body. I was like, I wanted to do one of those like full-on thing to a six-year-old, as far as like, you're wrong because XYZ was like, whatever. Like, I was like, it's one of those things like, I just had to suffer it and deal with it, because like, there's no way he's gonna get it, because he never saw what basketball was before then that led to where we are now, where, you know, you get an Anthony Edwards dunk or you get a Ja Morant dunk. He loved them to the death, by the way. Why? Because they dunk on people like crazy. So yeah, man. Yeah. Like, another one, never told you about this one. Sorry for digressing. He asked me and Daniel one time, was Jason Tatum the best basketball player in the world? We were like, no, Jokic was. He looked at us like we had four heads combined. I was like, I can't believe this. I just can't. Jason Tatum is the best basketball player in the world, and he's better than Jokic. This was like last year. Me and Daniel were like,
you don't find out Caden is on Twitter with an avatar. with an Anthony Edwards avatar.
It's because Jokic don't dunk. That's what it is. It's because Jokic don't dunk.
got to capture the youth in this country.
But I was so disappointed.
As far as, and I think, you know, they couldn't just coast on the video package or whatever, so that's why they did what they did after, which they pulled out the new AEW Unified Championship. These have plates, one for the Rainmaker, one for the One Wing Angel on there. And I saw this. I loved it. I thought it was like, oh man, this rivalry is like immortalized in some small way or whatever. There's the arguments of maybe you should have done something based on AEW history or whatever, but you know, it's a choice they made. I think that
I mean they kind of did. The promotion don't exist if not for this match, if not for this rivalry.
There's that.
There's also that. So, so I like the belt. However, jokes, right? So do you remember V1 of the AEW women's title?
Yeah.
It looks just like that.
But bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. Just pointed out in my mind. I haven't seen any. I haven't looked at it. But I wonder if anyone's made that joke online or whatever else and you know, racked up the likes or not. But is there? Someone has to, you know, obviously present it better than I just did, but is there?
Yeah. So the winner is getting that belt, then the international and the continental are going away. And basically, Kenny came out there and said, he spoke earnestly to Okada, who at this point, you know, they told him to come out. He says, 7 years almost to the day we had our last match. Let's leave it all in the ring one final time for everything. I was getting excited. I was like, let's get it. And then all of a sudden, that Don Callis music started hitting. I was like, all right, here we go. And then Kenny Omega fucking snaps. And he's like, fuck this. Essentially, you're not going to ruin this match. I know all your tricks. And then, you know, basically says, you're not going to cuss us a couple times. He was pretty animated.
You know what I wanted, honestly? Do you remember when Omega first came back and Callis interrupted him and then Omega basically ran straight up, just straight on site, ran and got him? I wanted him to do that again. Not like I want that to be a constant tradition. You, Callis shows up, interrupt Kenny Omega. Omega said, you know what? I'm going to take a piece out your ass every single time I see you.
None of this.
But go ahead, Rich. Go ahead, Rich. Tell us what happens from there.
Yeah, so like he said, I know all your tricks, and then Cal's like, you didn't know this one, and then all of a sudden that camera swings the long way, and then you're like, fuck, Okada's out here about to join him. So Okada drops Kenny from the back and joins with Don Callis, and after all these years, Don Callis has finally bought Kazuchika Okada. James, how do you feel about this?
So this will be the first time going into an Okada Omega match where I'll be rooting for Kenny Omega. There's that. Also, there's this part where it's like, damn it, he's gonna be on fucking commentary for this match. I can't fucking escape the Don Callis.
You will, because you'll be in person.
Oh yeah, but even a rewatch, I have to watch that and suffer through it.
You won't rewatch this shit.
Probably not. But maybe years from now. But still, I was just like, man, all right, so. But the only glimmer of hope I have out of this, not to say that his involvement makes the matches better. They don't. It is a personal thing where he irritates the shit out of me. And I think he's an evil guy. He's an evil character that I think should always be getting his ass kicked left and right. So this leaves the possibility that I finally get my Kenny Omega V trigger on Don Callis.
It's so always there.
It's always there. Kenny Omega gonna give me one. He gonna give me one of these days. They gonna give me that, and it's gonna be special.
I'd be in person.
I could be in person. Boy, if that, you know how I might hit a backflip in the damn crowd if he hits that shit in front of me. I don't even know how to do a backflip yet.
So, this nigga Don Callis pulls out his steel police baton. I'm like, why do you have this?
Cops.
And he basically swings that shit at Kenny, gives it to Okada, strikes him. Kenny collapses.
Right in the diverticulitis.
Yep. Keep hitting him. And then the medical personnel picks him up. And then Callis gloated from ringside. Then all of a sudden, Kazuchika Okada was like, I'm still on your ass. And he returned. And he basically catches this nigga on the gurney. And then gives him an elbow drop from the top rope. So Okada's wearing a suit this entire time. Yes. So like the way he does the elbow drop is like he don't jump. He just falls.
He falls. That shit is he don't even fall. He lean and drops. Yes. So, bro. All right. So he gives him the one from the top turnbuckle to the stretcher joint that's in the ring, or the flat board that's in the ring, right? And I'm like, okay. And then I've already seen the clips of him with the bloody mouth or whatever else. So I'm like, okay. So what the hell does he do to give him the bloody mouth? So then this motherfucker comes off the apron onto the gurney, which is less actually painful than him being on the like the first one he gave him. And then Omega comically gives a bro. I fucking start howling with laughter. Like, you mean to tell
me
they just showed this video package of, you know, three of like the 10 greatest matches I've ever seen in my life, right? Of this rivalry of like super, you know, just super spectacular, real, you know, ultra violent wrestling, right? Easy to buy in, easy to suspend your disbelief. And then you mean to tell me this motherfucker gets an elbow drop and just admit, bro, he vomited blood up. That's basically what he did. And I was like, all right, bro. Okay. Okay, like it turned into remember the shootout scene in Django Unchained when the blood was just flying ridiculous? It was like, this is
yes.
Like, it was one of those way the blood was coming out of Omega's mouth. I was like, this is, all right, this turned into slapstick comedy all of a sudden. I was like, all right, man, like, it's funny. I'm like, Kenny Omega's hilarious. He's just hilarious. Everything he does is funny, bro.
Bro, was this some anime stuff? I thought I saw people comparing it to something that happened in anime, like where he spits out the blood or something.
Maybe it was. There's a lot of those. I haven't seen all the animes in the world. There's dozens and dozens and dozens. I've only watched maybe like a handful of them ever. But
I don't watch the anime. I save them all for you. Like,
thanks. Come on, man. Thanks. Yeah, I have not watched Beep or Bleach or Cowboy Bebop, so I'm not much of a anime person as much as I wish I could be. I'm watching live action anime every Wednesday. So yeah.
So I didn't watch the whole second part. I was like, all right. I think I watched only a few things. The only thing I did see was the FTR in the Atlantis senior and junior brawl and the promo leading up to that. That was fucking awesome. This nigga Dax Harwood and Atlantis senior. I need them niggas to do it. I need him to do it.
Okay.
This nigga Dax was out here.
I skimmed to the end of the match.
This man is so funny when he is like selling ass for 62-year-old Atlanta senior. I was screaming. I was like, this is amazing. But of course we got the Bucks and Hangman segment we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Kyle Fletcher ended up beating Anthony Bowens. They did a Julia Hart and Tony Storm match that was kind of decent, actually. I do remember seeing that.
Okay.
But they've got to do more. You know, they went very heavy the first week with Mercedes and Tony, and Mercedes is going to be wrestling Zeus tomorrow for her belt in CMLL. So I don't know what they're going to do there, but this was an angle heavy show or whatever. Yeah. Basically, all these baby faces, like your Swerve, your Ospreay, is out here getting dead rights killed. Kenny Omega, dead rights killed.
Yeah. Mercedes beat the shit out of Tony, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it got interrupted by Mina.
Oh, she had Mercedes had that stakeout, had that well done steak again. You saw that, right? this is a new running gag. She out here just eating big meals at ringside. Shit's funny.
Like, got the mixed heels team,
bro. She's so good at being a heel. She's so good, like, cause like she does this ticky tack annoying stuff. It's just I like it. I like it a lot. But yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but we got the mixed trios team of Mark Briscoe, Tomohiro Ishii, and Will Nightingale. Love that team. There was
a Will Yuta.
Yeah. There was a Wheeler Yuta and Chris Statlander vignette that I saw, and they were making it like Statlander has a home with the Death Riders, essentially. Like, hey, man, like, why don't you come roll with me?
And you if know, not, you got to face Marina. Yeah, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Marina Shafir is what causes Statlander and Willow to reconnect. I guess we're gonna have to come up with a war for Marina. She was a straw that stirred a drink.
But yeah, this is all a really good show. Mexico's next week, and they're doing a big 10-man tag. They're doing a 12-man tag, I think.
Yeah, 12. It was they announced in the main event, like it was like an 8-man or whatever. And then after all the stuff that happened in the fallout, they like Tony Khan put another graphic at 12-man. Like, god damn. All right.
I mean, in CMLL, like they'll eat that shit up.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. I'm just saying, like, as far as the way they've done Fyter Fest, like the 4-hour block shows, and also Summer Blockbusters, like all these things were like basically like one segment of interference leads to like one person coming out, and they had in their segments right up right after. I liked how this was all done. I liked how that was
This was the second of like the 2 4-hour shows. Right. Like I didn't make it all the way through the 4-hour shows, but like what I did watch, I liked a lot. Like and then I didn't hear people being like, "This is way too long."
There was a Beast Mortos and Bandito match too that I think he would I don't, you know, that's Coliseum, but I didn't get a chance to get to it.
So the lineup for Mexico is there's a 4-way, Mascara Dorada, Ricochet, Hologram, and Leo Rush, and that is a 4 million peso challenge. I heard someone say that Ricochet needs to win and then think he made $4 million or whatever. And he'd be like, yeah, you got to bring this shit back to America. And then he's like, I'm rich, but like then he finds out he not rich, essentially.
I mean, look, that's still $200,000. I put this on mute and I had to send that into Google. Like, hold on, how much is 4 million pesos in USD? It's like, oh, $210,000. That's a lot of money. Because then, what was the other match that the Babyfaces won that was a bunch of money for the Babyfaces when they won?
I think that was $100,000.
Okay. Tony Khan said, hey, we doubling it. Okay.
But,
both, you got AW Death Riders and CMLL both put up $100,000.
Yeah, got Death Riders and the Young Bucks teaming up against the Ops, Swerve and Ospreay, MJF versus Mystico, and then you've got Hechicero,
Kyle Fletcher, Yosuke Takeshita.
What's up? Yes, all right, listen to this lineup. Hechicero, Kyle Fletcher, Konosuke Takeshita, FTR, and Josh Alexander. That's a wrestling-ass wrestling team right there.
Yeah.
Against Bandido, Templario, Atlantis Jr., Adam Cole, Brody King, and Daniel Garcia. So, I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be 2.5-hour show. You know, we'll see. We'll see how they get down and all that. But
coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Yeah, that's it for the wrestling. I don't know if you wanted to talk about any basketball or anything.
We did that in the pre-show with what happened in this Connecticut Sun and Indiana Fever game as far as basketball. As far as the NBA, I mean,
Caitlin's back. You know, we had the big weekend with, her going crazy against the Liberty. Just like 38 seconds of fury.
I've heard Christine Brennan, and I've heard Callan Kerr, her bro, say, like, this is the most entertaining stretch, or that three threes were like the most entertaining stretch in WNBA history. And I was like, you might be right. Also, y'all don't watch enough. Y'all haven't covered or watched enough WNBA to be being declarative and saying that. I would have held that one off. You're going to piss people off. But then again, the people that get pissed off by it, they ain't talking to them.
They're going to be mad anyway.
Yeah, they're not talking to them. I wouldn't have been as definitive in saying that. I would have been like, this is different than anything we've ever seen in this league. I would definitely have said that. Because that's what she is. Like, she, you know, how many times I got to make the comparison to, like, Steph Curry, Randy Moss, just shit different. We ain't seen no shit like this before. Based on what we've seen before, she's ripping this league, or she's going to come and rip the league up. Like, that's what it is.
There's bad news, like, on another front. Nafis Collier, like, left the game injured with a back injury tonight. I hope that she's not out for, let alone extended period of time. I hope she's not out for any period of time. But if she is, you know what's about to happen. So, I hope Nafis is great, because she's got off to an all-time great start to the season. Yeah. She's 50-40-90.
Yep.
26 points. Stellar defense.
Isn't it like eight rebounds or something like that?
Yeah.
I looked at the
final is between the Fever and the Lynx on July 1st.
Okay.
So, there was a hugely physical game just before we went on air with the Connecticut Sun and the Indiana Fever. And everybody involved were the white women. You know, this was like a Marina Mabry, Caitlin Clark, J.C. Sheldon, and Sophie Cunningham. And it turned into like, it was a game that constantly kept escalating because the officials did not get this thing in control.
When did the score of the game like get out of hand?
So the Fever pretty much had like a 14-point lead all game.
Okay.
Like probably from the second quarter on.
Okay.
Like nothing really changed. There was no like run or anything, but it was just chippy as fuck. Mm-hmm. And obviously J.C. Sheldon basically guards Caitlin like she's Rajah Bell trying to guard Kobe Bryant or something. Like she'll just do dirty. She's like Bruce Bowen, all that shit. Like, and then like basically Caitlin like tells her like, hey man, there's nothing you can do. Like, I'm still going to do what I want to do, essentially. And the shit was funny. Like, Caitlin Carr was plus 31 on the night, and Jason Sheldon was, like, minus 22. Like, it was just belt to ass, essentially. Yeah. But it was just a bunch of dirty shit, like, the whole game, essentially.
Yeah, I love people like that. They'd be like, they just talking and still talking while they down. Like, they'd be like, I'm still here. Yeah, you here losing. Shut up. Collect your check, take your L, move on to the next. There will be another day for you to talk shit. This ain't the one.
Yeah,
like
I
was actually talking to someone today that said they don't like Halliburton because like he only talks shit when he up, but when he's down or whatever else, like he don't really say much. I was like, I don't know if that's necessarily true or how much you actually say. I don't know if that's actually true, but what I will say is when you win, you get to talk shit because you won. Those are called bragging rights. That's what comes with the territory. We both got into a fight. I whoop you. I get to lord it over to you until you come whoop me. If you don't ever get to whoop me, well, guess who gets to talk forever? That's how that goes. Yeah.
The chef, Marina Mabry, had a terrible game in disguise. She was looking for smoke all night. Like she got involved early on in the pull apart or whatever. Then she got into knocking Caitlin Clark down way harder than Kennedy Carter did. Way harder. And then the eye poke from J.C. Sheldon on Caitlin Clark, way more than Dejanay Carrington. It almost makes the Carrington one look completely accidental, which I still contend that it was. But I think this is the real smoke. Like, this was like, I was watching a game from the 90s tonight. Like, as far as like, niggas was just hanging around, and then like, you know, there's a minute left in the game, and you know some bullshit about to happen, and then it culminates in like, J.C. Sheldon getting on a fast break, and it was almost like Sophie Cunningham didn't even bother running up the floor. She was just under the rim, essentially waiting for it, and everybody in the arena knew it was about to happen. She jumps up, and Cunningham hugs her and then throws her down.
Yep.
And then they get up, and they running it, James.
I didn't see that part. All I saw was the wrap up and throw down.
Yeah, she
it wasn't even much of a throw down. It was like a wrap. It was like a put down. It was like a wrap up put down. Like, yeah, you going. You already head that way. Let me help you there.
Sophie gets her in the clinch and pretty much kind of controls it. Jason can't really move or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's like caught up, but like the other teammates in there trying to break it up, but they going at it. Like you can see, like this was physical. Like this was like, wow, someone stepped up. And like Jason Sheldon had been agitating Caitlin Clark. And the funniest shit was when Caitlin Clark finally checked out of the game, which was like 2 minutes before this, they pulled Caitlin because they were like, we don't want no more shit happening. Caitlin Clark exits the game with a fuck you three in Jason Sheldon's face, cusses the bench out, cusses Jason Sheldon out, and then cranks up the crowd. And I'm like, this is fucking Jordan. This is fucking Kobe. Like this is the one. She is the one. Like I was cranked watching this, and it was like it was such a good time to watch. Like it was like, hey man, whenever you see these agitators or whatever, these people that are in the league that are almost doing whatever they can to hold on, and they get into something with the star player, right? And if they have a history with one of those star players, like J.C. Sheldon does, going back to college with Caitlin Clark, it even makes it better when the star just asserts their dominance. Essentially, it's almost like that Kevin Durant, Patrick Beverly, like, I'm Kevin Durant, stop this. Like, it felt like Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverly too. Patrick Beverly's in a lot of these or whatever, because she kind of defends with the same tactics that he does. But
is she as good as getting around screens as he was? That, do you remember the shit that Patrick Beverly was doing against Devin Booker in that West Conference Finals? It's like, how the fuck is, like, he you can't screen him. How are you unscreenable? How are we sending ball screens on dude with an all-star guard and the screen might as well not even be there. He's getting around it so well. That was mystifying. I was like, all right, bro.
You from the wreck.
Yeah, he is. But, hey, like, Tony Allen from the wreck, too, and he wouldn't move around screens like that either. Like, I've never seen him manipulate the way, get around screens. Like, even Caruso now. He's almost unscreenable, but even he gets caught. Anyway, huge distraction. But yeah.
But yeah, man, this was a real moment.
You talking about physical
tonight?
You were talking about physical.
Bro. Yeah, and then Stephanie White like just blitzed the refs in the post game. Like everyone in this league is getting better except the referees. I was screaming. She's getting fined.
Oh yeah.
But
oh yeah, they finna definitely go in her pockets and take out $750.
Yeah, but yeah, this was a belt to ass, but it was like, yeah, bro, like the overlay of the game changed in like the third quarter. Like the Fever went completely cold. The Sun had to put their entire bench in, and their bench started catching fire. But they never were able to like take the lead or whatever. But yeah, this is gonna be interesting how people react to this one, because there's no race war to be had, but
which means,
you know, people still going to add ass.
I don't know. You mean on Twitter, or you mean like the larger like sports world?
I mean, they're just going to turn it on like Sophie Cunningham. Like the W Media is going at her now, like saying this is uncalled for. There's no place for this in the sport and all this other stuff.
Shut up.
They were like, Caitlin Clark caused this. And I was like, how? Like, she got poked in the eye and then, like, shoved someone off of her or whatever. And then got shoved by Marina Mabry. Bro, they were booing Marina Mabry like she was LeBron after that. Every time she touched the ball, like, going back to Cleveland in 2011. Like, J.C. Sheldon's getting it the rest of her career when she steps in Indiana. Like, those boos. Angel Reese ain't been booed that hard. Like... Mm. Like, okay. like for my money, like incident for incident, this was the biggest one since Caitlin Clark's been in the league of any of them. Like, it was a combo of all of them. It was the eye poke. Mm-hmm. It was the shove. It was the physical the dirty defense. It was all that shit, all in one.
Mm. Well, I think that, yeah, I also saw people on Twitter was like, you type in Marina Mabry, you'll see people like be like,
"Hello, yeah, chef."
Be like, you know, no, not even that. It was like
she should have been thrown out.
It was them, yeah. It was them, like, you know, being like, "That a girl?" I was like, "Oh,
that's what they doing." Yeah, that's what they doing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, my post game video, James, is about to break 6,000 views already. So they eating it up.
Yeah, it's crazy. You want to talk about the men's finals?
Man, it seems like it's over now, bro.
Like Halliburton, I was watching him or whatever else, and like he took the fall, not the metaphorical fall, but he fell. And I was like, and then ever since then, like when he was in the game, I was like, very, very can't get by anybody without a screen type of stuff. And I was like, this ain't good. And then, you know, TJ McConnell went nuts to keep the game close. Him and Siakam both, you know, went crazy to keep the game close, and they got to 5. And then they, you know, it's hindsight or whatever, but they should have ended the game with TJ McConnell instead of Halliburton. He just didn't have anything. And then like it turned into like, I think it was like 4 straight turnovers. And it's like, it's been the story of the series. If Indiana does not turn the ball over, they can win. If they do, OKC is going to get out on the break, and they're just going to, their life seems so much easier on offense. That's really what it came down to. Like the first game, they had 19 turnovers in the first half, and the second half, they didn't have many. That's how they were able to come back. Turnovers is the biggest story of this finals, like whole thing. I mean, I guess you want to throw in like Shea and Jalen Williams going nuts in the fourth quarter of game 4, but outside of that, everything's been based on turnovers. It's really been the whole story of this finals.
Yeah, it seems like after game 4, like when you lose in that fashion, yep, like that's kind of seemed like, yep, that. In the series, like there's some shit that happened at the end of that game, that like that Shea did.
That was a good punch.
Like, Shea, bro,
like 15 last 15 points. That's a legendary performance. Him and Jalen Williams were unguardable. They went to that 2-man game of like, and this is funny because like while it was happening, I was like, I forgot what the lineup was. It was out there for OKC, but I was like, why isn't Siakam guarding Jalen Williams? Like, is he just stuck? Because I could have, it's like, is he just stuck on like Halliburton, not Halliburton, but stuck on like Harkenstein or stuck on Chet or whatever else? Like, they need to find a way to move that matchup. Like, but, you know, because Jalen Williams, like, when Nesmith guards him, is not much of a problem for him. And then, like, Nesmith just cannot stay in front of Shea without fouling. So, but anyway, like Nesmith was just like, he was really good against Brunson, but not against these two. And like,
bro, him being out there, that's what I saw Shea do at the end, like with the arm and the trip at the same time. I was like, this.
You do it again? Do the elbow?
My fault. It needs to be complete.
No, because you're doing it like if it's a push off, and he's not bringing it up and out. He's bringing it across, like, he's bringing it out. Like, no, like he's throwing like an MMA elbow strike, except his forearm.
Bro, that shit is insane.
And it's on his ribs. I was like, bro, like, that's the part about his game that is frustrating. Is like,
and the trip.
I don't even remember. Yeah, I get, people were arguing about who tripped who, and I was like, I don't know. Honestly, do not know who tripped who in that situation. No idea. Which is like, well, if you don't know who tripped who in this situation, then maybe you call the travel because he took 3 steps. I don't know. But either way, he was on fire in that fourth quarter. But that's the part that's frustrating with him, is like, it's all just mid-range. It's all just, he's paper cutting you to death. And like, you can't breathe on him sometimes, because then it's a foul. And then he's allowed to just fucking elbow you in your rib cage and raise up, and it's like, all right, man, well, this ain't no guarding him then. Like, he's just the best one-on-one player in the NBA. Like, niggas talk about the ones shit or whatever else, he gonna beat everybody in ones, because you can't touch him, and he can touch you all the damn time. It is what it is. So,
yeah.
But yeah, man, either way, he went nuts in that fourth quarter. He's been great, except for like game 3, he's been great in every game in this series, and he's going to be finals MVP and league MVP and first team All-NBA. He's going to be one of them rarefied years. And he's only 26, you know, and his team's presumably going to be better because Jalen Williams is only 23. He's going to be better. Like, I know you said earlier, season, you thought Jalen, early in the playoffs, you thought Jalen Williams was ass. And I was like, he's been inconsistent, but like, if he's going to be, as he gets older, like by the time he's 26, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be better than Jalen Brown. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to be better than Jalen. He's better than him offensively already right now. He can use both hands and finish with both hands. I had concerns about Chet or whatever else, but it's like, if Shea's going to be this for the next 5 years and Jalen and dark-skinned Jalen's going to get better and they got all these movable pieces and easy contracts move out and, you know, all these draft picks, whatever, to get somebody if it don't go well or whatever else, they can go big game hunt or they can, you know, get the three for two special. They're set up better than anyone for the next 5 years. Better than anyone, and they're about to win the title. So, was that, you know, we might have to buckle in for.
Gotta lock in.
Might have to lock in.
We'll see.
Yeah. I ain't saying anything, you know, because even the Warriors got competed, you know, went seven with the Rockets. Like, I'm not saying they're gonna be unbeatable. Like, I'm saying they have a chance to be in major legitimate contenders for the next 5 years, and they're already winning the title with what presumably is going to be like one of their worst teams in the next 5 years.
I mean, since, you know, it seems like Haliburton is kind of hobbled or whatever, any chance they could sub in Caitlin Clark, you know, for the, you know, she could just run point. You muted.
Yeah, they need help with three-pointers, but outside of that, like, can we put Caitlin Clark's shooting ability inside of TJ McConnell and see how that works? TJ McConnell do not want to shoot threes at all. And then when he does shoot them, they go in. Like, yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. But yeah, he'll always have that game four or that game five in his in the thing. Like, I don't know how many backup point guards are better than him. Like, I don't know what the situation is, his contract, whatever else, but it's like, there are plenty of teams that need someone that can do what he does in a, you know, with second units or whatever else. And not many teams have that.
Yeah, he's been around a while.
Yeah, I mean, he was he's one of the process Sixers.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around a long time. I'm just saying, like, the last 2 years watching him in the playoffs, like, I just like him. And, like, he doesn't want to shoot because it takes forever to fucking launch the thing because his release is super long. But, like, I just like the way he plays offensively. Like, he's out here, he gets in the paint, he's out here just causes you a bunch of stress because, like, he'll get into the paint and he'll do that Steve Nash shit where you just dribble through and all whatever else and then drive underneath the rim and then come back around. I'd hate to have to guard him. Oh, God. I'd hate to have to guard him. If I was an NBA player, that, like, he'd just leave you. You don't have a chance to breathe when you play him, it feels like.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess the Thunder about to win. I would have loved to see the Pacers, pull it off. But, no, yeah. that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. I quite frankly, I like watching Indiana play more. But I just thought that there was too much of a talent gap. And, like, once Haliburton's hobbled, it's like, well.
Yeah.
They had some, and then they game four. And then that, look, man. Shea and Jalen Williams we are not losing this finals in that fourth quarter. It's over.
At this point, it's game six. You're on your home court. Shit, go out firing. Everybody launching threes. We trying to just live to fight another day.
That could definitely happen. Like, because what if Aaron Nesmith and Miles Turner actually, like, play worth a damn or shoot worth a damn? They have not shot worth a damn in this finals.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But is that it?
That's it for me, man. Yeah, it for me.
That's it. Light week. All right. Thanks for watching, y'all. If you are watching from, or sorry, normally say thanks for listening, y'all. If you're watching from the stream, be sure to go over to the show notes so the podcast was posted and go to the WrestleClick and donate there. Listen, also go to our Chopped Tees store pick up some One Nation Radio merch there, and be sure to listen to other shows on the network besides One Nation Radio. You have Keeping the Strong Style, All Things Elite, AEW Match Guide, Wrestling, Art with Chris Things, MWB Adventure, Tunnel Talk, and the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast. Thanks for listening, y'all. Later.
Peace.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.